You know, we'll do it live. Trump does something crazy. Everyone wants to see it.
No, I've watched every minute of both of them. I watch a lot of the primary stuff too. Very entertaining election season for sure. My favorite one ever.
Yeah, I mean, it's both a favorite and just a terror. I mean, oh, whatever, everybody. You know, we're all recording. We're just talking now, and the show has started. What better way to start a show than to be talking about all the shit you're trying to avoid in the world? So, I'm Mike Coughlin, and that's Matt Grady laughing at me being me as I admonished the both of us for talking about current events. And you are listening to whatever the fuck we call this thing here at halfguard.com. And now I'm done hosting, and Matt can do whatever.
All right. So, there was no big show this past weekend, which is where we typically start. I mean, there were a couple little shows maybe we can touch on later. But I guess the biggest news of the week broke on Monday. George St. Pierre was on the MMA Hour with Ariel Helwani, and it's kind of old news now, but I thought we could break it down a little bit. St. Pierre claimed that he is now a free agent because he was not offered a fight by the UFC within a reasonable amount of time. He said that his attorney, James Quinn, had terminated his contract with the UFC, and he's now free to fight anywhere. Again, this is St. Pierre's claim. The UFC put out a statement saying GSP remains under an existing agreement with Zuffa as his MMA promoter. Zuffa intends to honor its agreement with GSP and reserves its rights under the law to St. Pierre to do the same. So, you know, the UFC, Zuffa is still claiming he's under contract, he can't go anywhere. St. Pierre is claiming the opposite. Usually how these things end up is in a courtroom. You see it going that way, Mike?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know if it ends up in a courtroom just because I just can't picture St. Pierre signing with Bellator. This guy could have come back at any time to fight. And if it's about money, he could have just been the UFC making money. So I really do take him at his word that he kind of wants to challenge himself and do well. And like, leaving the UFC to go to Bellator, I don't see that happening. But I do think that they end up, you know, working it out on some level. I mean,
the whole story has been kind of odd because I don't want to say for years, but St. Pierre's been out about 3 years now since his last fight where he beat Hendricks in that real close decision. Since that time, he said he was going to take a little time off. He never used the word retirement. And off and on, he's been doing mini camps and talking about coming back. There was the appearance at the McGregor-Diaz fight. It looked like he was interested in coming back for a while, but the whole time he's been saying this and kind of moving in that direction, White has been saying the opposite. He has no heart. He doesn't want to fight anymore. He's got a lot of money. And kind of just downplaying St. Pierre. So the whole situation's been odd all along. I mean, if you just use common sense, you're probably assuming when St. Pierre signed his last contract in 2011, UFC has seen quite a few changes. Obviously, they've added USADA. There's the Reebok deal. You can't have sponsors anymore. Now there's new owners. So a lot has changed in the time St. Pierre's been on his sabbatical. So, obviously, a lot of those changes play into it as well.
Yeah, I suspect that it all sounds like it comes down to probably the sponsorships thing. But, it's all just up. It's all complete speculation. Nobody's seen the contract. I don't know if he's got, you know, a traditional UFC contract. I would imagine that his contract would have been largely the same as most guys, but with a little bit more fine-tuned wording, just given the position he would have been at when he renegotiated it. But, reading some of this stuff here and there, I mean, it sounds like they kind of offered him a fight, and he said it wasn't quick enough or whatever. I didn't hear what his attorney said earlier today about it, his reasoning for this, but I imagined from the get-go that it was something just basically a lack of good faith on the UFC's part and shit like that. But
I saw something where it said they gave him like 10 days to give send him about agreement with somebody.
And the thing is,
and they like, I don't know if they shot him a text or what happened, but something about Robbie Lawler, but there was no date, there was no location, there was no event. Well, so they didn't take it serious, and they did it at like the last possible like moment.
I'm sure they didn't take it seriously. And the thing is that I don't think that that's really something that you can, that is in St. Pierre's hands. You know, I mean, the contract is not, he's arguing that it is voidable by either party for certain reasons, but if the UFC says, we have you, we have to offer you so many fights within so many years, is what the deal is, basically. And if they haven't, I mean, if you want to say the UFC's never offered you a fight prior to 2 seconds before this, I guess you could say that something isn't being reasonably done by the UFC, but I can remember the
past. There was a show in Montreal where they even offered him a fight. Like, I don't remember the specifics, but I remember hearing about that, and White claimed he turned it down.
Yeah, and again, the other thing is, I can't, without seeing the contract itself, I don't know if, you know, I can see them saying, well, you didn't really offer us a fight because you offered us a fight at the numbers of the previous deals, but the numbers of the previous deals don't include the lost sponsorship revenue. So you haven't really honestly offered us a fight. And I mean, like I said, it's all going to be very, very, contract language heavy. I don't think it would ever go to trial or anything. This is something that realistically, if a judge wanted to, they could get it done quicker. But
for GS, how does claiming he's a free agent benefit GSP? It's just kind of a power play, right? I mean, legally, he can't legally go and sign with Bellator right now, correct?
Well, I mean, that's the thing. It's why he went out and did it. I'll get to that in a second, I guess. As far as can he go out and sign with Bellator, I mean, this isn't like it's illegal is, I guess, the term, but it's not like the risk if he does is he goes to jail. The risk is that he has to go to the fight in the UFC for millions or whatever. And I guess in theory, if you say that you're a free agent, like if you're telling the UFC, look, we don't think that this contract is valid between the two us, we have to, you know, the contract is therefore terminated, then I guess in theory you would tell everybody. You know, normally it'd be the UFC's release you or whatever, but this was his way of saying, and I think they probably have to have some discussion or something to show that they're serious. That said, I mean, if you're Bellator, do you really want to get into this kind of weird territory given everything you just went through with Quentin Jackson? So I think that just if this is successful for St. Pierre, I feel like this is it could be a monumental game changer if it's going to go his way, because it's going to be a total upending of contracts and everything. But yeah, I think he's more likely just gonna either settle or it's gonna just go away when nobody wants to do the work.
I mean, one of the weirder parts of it is he can't get that money even if UFC's lowballing him. Like, there's rumors he's looking for $10 million, which sounds like a lot of money for a fight, but where's he going to go and get $5 million? Do you know what I mean? If UFC is offering $7.5 million, that's still a hell of a lot more money than Bellator is going to pay him to fight on Spike.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in theory, I mean, like, if you're Bellator and you had the chance, maybe you do it just to do it, but that seems like it's...
But what's the return on investment?
You'd have to be just banking like crazy that you're getting basically $10 million worth of advertising from it. I don't think it would make immediate financial sense. I don't think you could quantify it, but I could see somebody being, if I come being like, wait a second, he's available? Well, this just feels like it's something, a big star, and maybe we could, and then they could actually say, hey, wait, we could do a pay-per-view.
Yeah. I mean, the question would obviously be what kind of draw – how big of a draw is St. Pierre without the UFC? And granted, you know, he's probably the fourth biggest draw in the history of the sport between you know, McGregor, Rousey, and Lesnar. So obviously he's a huge, huge star, but there's something about buying a Bellator pay-per-view that it doesn't have the same appeal. You know?
Yeah, no, I mean, it would be different, but again, because he is just one of these historical stars, it's way beyond anything else. What, again, if you're Bellator, you can offer a pay-per-view with him on top. But you can also have, you know, Benson Henderson and a couple of other guys from like the UFC who, when they left, were by no means washed up. And so you can kind of like make it look like a semi-UFC type-ish card. And
Throw Rory on there, Mitrione.
Yeah. And suddenly it goes, oh, that looks like a UFC card. Hey, I like some of, I know some of those guys. Again, it's not like you can build for the future like pro wrestling necessarily, but I think St. Pierre is just so just massive, beyond just massive, that, you know, I mean, I'm not saying that he's doing a million buys with Bellator or anything like that, but I could see it breaking 500,000, no problem. And at that breaking point, Bellator could probably pay him about $10 million. I mean, it'd be a lot more of a higher percentage of what usually, gets paid by promoters, but it could work in theory, I guess.
Yeah. Legally, do you think could he legally be better off if he self-promoted a fight in Montreal? Like, what if he sold out, you know, that arena in Montreal and put it on pay-per-view? You know how like Mayweather and the big boxers do their own promotion, that sort of thing? Get 100% of the cut, pay his people, pay the production, and just keep all the money himself. If he's not hired and doesn't sign with anyone else, does that make a difference?
I mean, legally, that would be weird. I think it would just be that a judge wouldn't permit that. It wouldn't fly. It would just be like, that's just that. Yeah. No, because you're actually in a new promotion. There is a promotion there. Something is promoting you and they're promoting the other guys. You're not all just randomly showing up and having your own like 10 guys and 10 different promotion companies or whatever. So it would be a new promotion. So, it's A for effort, though. That's pretty good, though. That's better than a lot of things that you could do. Like all you could really do is, like, I don't know, run a show in some island or something like that where, I don't know, Russia's got something, I'm sure, that they'll let you run shit for illegally. I got nothing.
For me... Like, on a personal level, I kind of feel bad for GSP in this whole situation. I don't know where your head's at with it, but it's just like, the guy's 35. He was a pretty loyal soldier for them for, you know, 10 years, however long he's been with them, longer than that now. Or maybe not now since he's gone, but either way, it's like, it seems like he wants to fight again. He probably lost money on the sponsorship deal and the Reebok deal. And it's like, he just wants to get paid what he was getting paid before, we think, and fight again. And it's like, he's 35, and this thing could get drawn out for a long time. But you think he will fight again in the UFC, if you had to guess?
If he fights again, I think it's in the UFC. Whether he does, I don't know. I think he's always kind of, I don't want to say, he's kind of like all over the place. He's, you know, GSP's a different type of dude. You know, he's got a bomb shelter designed to ward off aliens. So, yeah, you can understand where sometimes Dana White might be a little skeptical of what's going on there.
Yeah, no, I get it. And, I mean, everybody assumes Dana's, you know, lying and full of crap, but, you know, maybe there is some truth to it. I don't know, but it's an interesting story. Obviously he's the biggest star to try and do something like this. Whether it's a legitimate move to get out of the UFC or just a power play, it's a big deal, and it'll be a story moving forward for sure.
And what I really want to throw in, because it'll probably come up in a second also otherwise in other contexts, is that this is like one of the times I've heard of one of these, you know, mega fighters, mega stars, publicly kind of bad-mouthing the new ownership. This isn't, you know, Jose Aldo or whatever, these guys who just don't understand. You know, St. Pierre's people said at one point, you know, there are people who are like, we're kind of doing well with Fertitas, and then this new ownership group came in and they were saying these things and this and that, and it seemed like they didn't know what they're doing or understand it. And, you know, you haven't heard that from Connor. Obviously, he seems to be happy. Rhonda must be happy. I don't think John Jones has a choice. But St. Pierre, I know.
I bet John Jones is happy right now.
Well, he did win a Naga tournament, so I guess he's kind of happy. And I don't know. Yeah. But it definitely does seem like this whole WMEI, whatever the hell it is, this is a little bit more of a hands-on operation than I would have guessed when it started. Like, I figured they would have bought in and just been like, boom, all right, don't screw with this, let it be. But it sounds like their fingers meddling more and more within the promotion.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot going on, which we'll get to in a little bit. But I was going to say, like, in addition to GSP, to go along with what you just said, just in the last few weeks, there's Aldo, Khabib, Juliana Pena, Kawajiri, Ally Aquinta, Luke Rockhold, and Chris Wyben all kind of having these, like, I don't want to say public disputes, but they've made it clear that they're unhappy with their pay and their contract situations. Some of them want more money. Some of them want out completely. But this is the first time I can remember where there's a combination of top stars, you know, your Wyben, Rockhold, Aldo, GSP now, with gripes. And then your lower level people, Ally Quinter is selling real estate.
Well,
now. He's quit the UFC over what he was. It's too totally. In the past, the top stars always seemed pretty happy. They didn't complain. They would take their, you know, several million dollar payday and be happy with it. And now it's like everybody's got a gripe, and you got to wonder if some of the discontent has come because the company was valued at the $4.2 billion, and they saw that sale. They're like, if this company sold for that much, and we were only getting paid this much, we've been getting hosed all along.
I do think that number is going to be out there, I think, and really influencing things for a while, along with everybody just seeing exactly what's going on with Connor. Like, Rhonda, they could kind of be like, oh, well, you know, she's the woman that doesn't count. Or Brock Lesnar, it's a pro wrestler, we don't count. But Connor is pure MMA, and the amount of money he's making and bringing in, I really feel like a lot of guys are looking at it going, there's a lot of money in this. This isn't, like, our sport is not limited to $1 million at the top of the greatest ever. We can hit that $2 million or that $4 million. And when you get more money like that, like, oh, I think the biggest thing really is they see that Connor is willing to negotiate. This is a guy with all this money, and he's willing to go, I want to do a new deal now. And he's pure, makes business be in the front and center of his little character. And a lot of guys in MMA just don't do that. They're just, you know, dumb Brazilians or they're dumb farm boys. That's the only thing that exists in the sport. And so, like, they don't bring up, you know, hey, boss, I think I deserve more. It's kind of like, okay, well, yeah, we all get paid a little bit more because the UFC wants us to feel appreciated, but it's kind of like getting your 3% cost of living raise as opposed to like getting a 20% bump in payday.
Right. To go along with this, I'm not sure if you saw this story, but there was a Wall Street Journal article just in the last couple days, and it reported that the structure of the UFC sale was too liberal with adjustments to earnings, which allowed for more borrowing. So essentially what happened, and I'm not an economist by any stretch, but basically the Federal Reserve warned Goldman Sachs, which was one of the banks that marketed the debt to the investors who, you know, eventually bought the UFC, and that they were basically accused of inflating the earnings before interest, taxes, depreciation, and amortization, which is a lot of fancy words that no one cares about. But the bottom line is the UFC was pegged at making a profit of about $170 million, but then it was raised up to $300 million when presented to debt investors to help finance the sale. And that's what allowed them to borrow $1.8 billion for the deal. So it looks like they, I don't want to say were shady, but kind of fudged the numbers a little bit so they could borrow what appeared to be a more reasonable amount of money to buy the company. So I think even when the sale went through, probably one of the first shows we did together, we were both like, there's no way it's worth $4.2 billion. And it wasn't, because they kind of tweaked the numbers from $170 million in profit to $300 million in profit. And I guess they based some of that on future payments from new television contracts and other licensing agreements. It's not like it's illegal, but it looks a little questionable, I guess would be the best way to put it. So the story that the company was worth $4.2 billion wasn't really accurate, even though that's what they paid for it.
Yeah, that's all kind of weird. Like, you do get in those kind of gray areas of investor fraud, and but if it was, you know, private equity, somehow, I don't know, just doubling your projected earnings on its face does sound stupid. But if they can show the math of, no, it's projected earnings because we know we're projecting a bigger TV contract and things like that. They're legally entitled to present the rosiest version of their future earnings, as long as it's a reasonably rosy. They don't have to present the most pessimistic, and it sounds like that's probably what they did.
Right.
But, look, they're the ones that have to, all that does let them borrow money, but they still have to pay it back. So,
right. I mean, the way I kind of looked at it was, maybe, you know, the Fertittas were saying, we'll sell it for $4 billion. You know, nobody's actually going to give us that. And then it's like, you know, they started digging and looking and playing with the numbers a little bit. And WME IMG didn't have the cash on hand to do it, so they had to borrow the $1.8 billion. But you can only borrow up to 6 times a company's profit, essentially, which – wasn't it didn't swing that way.
Okay.
The numbers didn't work. So they bumped it up to the $300 million in profit, so it looked more reasonable for them to borrow that money.
I feel like that's just like, I don't know, somebody, if you're a regulator and you're like, they're like, well, we know you can't borrow that much. Hold on. Wait, let me do the math again. Oh wait. We had the profits cut in half from what they were before. Just double that number.
In a couple,
oh, look at that.
Yeah, in a couple years, the TV deal will be much better. You'll be
like,
fine.
They're just like, oh, oops. Yeah. Like, no. Like,
Bernie Sanders would be bullshit right now.
And Bernie Madoff would be going, hell yeah, right now.
Yeah, they're the two most different Bernies on Earth, probably. So basically, with all this debt, they all these people who invested in the purchase, their money back, because they basically gave WME IMG the money to buy the company. So now they got to pay those people back with interest. So there's going to be some interesting moves in the next, you know, several months here. They're clearly going to be more desperate to make money, you know, book the big money fights. And keep costs down, which brings us to our next topic. I actually have some segues today. With the WME IMG purchase, there have been a lot of layoffs top level
U.S.
management.
You didn't just have a segue. I had set that up earlier because I thought you might talk about it, so now this is a callback.
So over the last 3 days, and it's like executives, it's not mid-level. I mean, there could be some of that. There could be some, you know, administrative assistants being canned too. But this looks like the more high-paid, more well-known executives in the company. Just to name a few of them, Gary Cook was relieved of his duties. He was the UFC's chief global branding officer and head of international business development. He had been in the UFC since 2012. And I guess he was the CEO for Manchester City Football. So a pretty famous guy. At one point, Dana White called him a rock star. Seemed to be doing a good job for the most part from everything we can tell. Tom Wright was also let go. He was the UFC executive vice president and GM for operations in Canada, Australia, and New Zealand. He played a big part in rewriting the criminal code in Canada to legalize MMA across the country. And he also got the cage ban lifted in Victoria, Australia. So he accomplished a couple things. I also think he was like, the president of the CFL. Granted, it's not the NFL, but still.
I like that the UFC is a step up from the CFL, though. I mean,
that is good. I don't know if the CFL would sell for $4 billion. Chief Content Officer Marshall Zelaznik, Social Media Director Shanda Maloney, Ken Berger, Jamie Pollock, all these high-level people have been let go. And it's not like it's just one department. It's like different people running different parts of the world, social media, their controller, the guy who does the books, was let go. Just a lot of just people all over where it's like they're taking managers and executives from departments and just getting rid of them, which happens all the time when I was going to call it a hostile takeover, but when a new company takes over, a lot of time people get let go and they put their own people in. That's natural in these situations. But it looks like they're clearing out some of these most highly paid Zuffa executives, possibly to save money and put their own people in who might be a little cheaper. And I can't say that for sure, but it'll be interesting to see if these, the terminations adversely affect the company, because they're kind of chopping off several different limbs here by letting all these people go.
Yeah, I mean, all those names, I mean, Zelnick and Cook, I mean, they were guys that everybody thought, all right, well, if this thing is sold, they'll move up into the Dana White type of role. Like, that's how high up they are. So them being gone, like, I understand that companies try to restructure things when they buy things, which I get and don't get. It's like, the UFC was successful for a reason. You shouldn't want to, like, replace things wholesale. Like, it's one thing, like, when you're, like, restructuring a failing business. Yeah, you get rid of all the dead weight. But the UFC's got a lot of apparently very efficient pieces. But nonetheless, accepting that companies will try to put their people in here and there and redo it a little bit, to do it this drastically, that's, like, usually you'd want to kind of ease in, because whoever you're going to be putting into place, you'd hope that they kind of get what's going on, like a Sean Shelby replacing Joe Silva type of deal, where you're like, all right, well, we eased in this guy, and the transition is going to probably be pretty smooth. But if you're getting rid of, it sounds like everybody, I mean, Joe Silva's gone. The only real major person left is Dana White. I mean, Joe Silva.
I mean, Dave Schaller.
Dave Schaller's gone. Burt Watson's still gone. I mean, this is horrible.
I was going to say Dave Schaller, Joe Silva, and obviously Lorenzo, they left on their own volition. We think they did. I mean, obviously Lorenzo did. He sold the company, but maybe Joe Silva and Dave Schaller knew something and got out while the getting was good. I don't know. It's very interesting, because to a degree it also shows what kind of power Dana might have. Like, do you think Dana supports all these people? Is he like, oh yeah, this will save money, I'm getting 9% of the profit, let's get rid of him? Like, this in theory should be a nightmare for him, because he's going to have a bunch of people who are less experienced, don't really know what they're, I don't want to say don't know what they're doing. I'm sure WME has a plan. I mean, they managed to get together $4 billion. They're not dumb people by any stretch, but if I was Dana, I was going to say pulling my hair out. But I would be a little worried at this point.
Yeah. It's really weird, because I thought Dana would have issues not having Lorenzo in particular around as a balance. But I figured, you know, I don't want to pretend like Dana's like some retarded person you need to keep an eye on. It's not that at all, but like him being in a comfortable environment, you would think would be best, for, you know, let Dana do what Dana does best. So he knows you can rely on Joe Silva to do this, or somebody else to do that, or whatever. And fine, Lorenzo isn't going to be there. You move somebody else in there to help a little bit. And maybe, okay, Joe Silva's gone. Fine, Shelby's there. It's close enough. It's not quite that, you know, you don't got that symbiotic relationship that's been that core. I mean, that core of the UFC was Silva, White, and Fertitta. Just kind of, they were the spine, you know, the nervous system of the whole company for all those years. And you lost two of the three synapses. You know, it's going to take Dana time to fire with the other ones, and then to remove everybody else. Like, I'm sure there's still a lot of people we don't know about that are fine and sure. are still there, but it, from the outside, again, it looks just like, oh, wow, you guys just decided that you're not going to basically have the same company at all. I really hope that you guys know what you're doing, because it's not just Dana White that makes this thing work.
Yeah, UFC is claiming it's less than 15% of the workforce is being let go, which doesn't sound that drastic. They're keeping 85% of their people, but it depends who the people are. And when you've got, 400 employees, 15% is still 60 people. We only named five or six.
Yeah,
who are going to be the other people?
I will say that, setting aside the names that I know here in the United States, and again, I don't exactly even know what they necessarily do, other than they've been around for a long time. I think a lot of the people that are being let go and being changed up, we hear they're like international offices and places like that. Those people are, it's probably far less important that they understand the sport, because they're not the ones booking and running the thing. They're essentially purely marketing type of wings. And if that's what WMEING there, that's what they do. Like, that's their bread and butter, and they're probably light years better than anybody, I guess, from their clientele list, at, marketing stars and making that stuff happen. So they may already have their own pre-existing structures in place there. And maybe that's exactly, maybe it's just a parallel running through here in the United States. And that explains why it'd be not a huge drastic overhaul. Cause if it's, when you see mass firings, it's cause the company itself is in trouble. When it's just a little, not that many, that's a lot of upper management types. And for once, it's good to not be the big guy in a company.
Huh. Yeah. my initial reaction is they're trimming some fat here. Who knows what the bonus system was for Gary Cook or how much he was getting paid to basically, run the European section of the company. And it seems like they're doing less shows. Maybe they're going to be a little more U.S.-based now. They got rid of Tom Wright, GSP's a question mark, Rory McDonald's gone. Maybe they won't run as many shows in Canada. Maybe they're going to be more focused on the States and travel a little less and maybe go a little less globally and focus more domestically. I don't know. But to me, my initial reaction was, wow, they're letting go of their most highly paid people and are going to put people in who are cheaper and try and save some money that way.
Yeah, like I say, so much of this is, literally backyard boardroom talk, whatever. I don't know what the hell I'm trying to say.
And it's total conjecture on my part, but just from, seeing similar things in the past, that's usually what you do. And I just know that debt and the money they owe is probably weighing on them, and that's their top concern. They got to make money. So you hopefully increase your profits and reduce your costs. And, payroll is a cost, unfortunately, of doing business.
How about you fire the assholes in your own company that fucked up and apparently put you in a financial jam right away? you bought the thing in July and it's already a white elephant. That's almost impossible. What kind of morons are you?
And especially because they're more popular now than they've ever been. I mean, that's the thing with all this doomsday, the new owners, they're firing everybody. The company's hotter than it has ever been.
Yeah,
it's the craziest part of it.
They technically own it since right before UFC 200. So they had UFC 200, 202, they'll have 205, they'll have 206, they'll have Ronda. I mean, holy crap, these guys are like the murderer's row. If you consider them a new promoter, no promoter in history has had that great a batting average when it comes to successful pay-per-views.
No. On the topic of saving money, we're going to totally change gears here. It was reported everywhere, and Dana White even confirmed that Conor McGregor was being fined $150,000 by the Nevada Athletic Commission, for the water bottle throw-in, and there was a Monster Energy drink in there prior to UFC 202 with the Diaz camp. Well, it turns out everyone had it wrong, apparently. NAC executive director Bob Bennett claims McGregor was only fined $75,000, and apparently the additional $75,000 was a figure given for GSP's future public service announcement work. It's not money McGregor will actually have to put forward.
What?
Does this make any sense to you?
No.
Had you heard that?
What the...
They're saying he was only going to pay him $75K, and that other $75K is a figure given to his future PSA work.
So
that's what they deem the value of that work.
So they're saying that he owes them $150,000. They're going to take half of it in cash now, and they're going to take the other half in barter, and the barter is him acting. And they're valuing his acting in the PSA at $75,000.
Yeah.
That's a really, really, really weird way to do things. Like that must...
But that is Nevada.
That's, I don't know, maybe 75 grand is what it would cost to get him to do a PSA. Hey, kids, don't bully you, and don't throw things in the classroom. I don't know.
The weirdest part was it was like, it's almost like they're backpedaling. Because of the public outcry. I mean, granted, there's not a petition to save Connor the money, like, you know, with Nick Diaz after the 5-year suspension. It's not that big of a public outcry, but people are like, for the most part, that's ridiculous. 150 grand for those water bottles.
Hold on. I might be able to figure this out. Say he makes $40 million a year, that's $770,000 a week. So to get to 75, if you take, should I divide that by 40 maybe? Is that what I would do that? That'd be $19,230 per hour on a 40 hour work week. And so they're basically figuring he's going to spend about 3.5 hours shooting this thing. And that's where they get their number from. I really, really hope that's their justification for this.
The other option is McGregor said he wasn't going to ever fight in Nevada again. Granted, I thought that was just pure, you know, bluster on his part. But maybe that they are concerned that because the thing that's weird about the whole state athletic commission thing, especially with Nevada, is they didn't try and suspend McGregor because they want him to fight in Nevada. They want him there because he brings in a ton of revenue to the casinos, the hotels, the restaurants. When he's in town, more people come to town, they watch him fight, and they spend money in Vegas. So they don't want McGregor out for any lengthy period of time. They want him to fight. So that's why they fine him instead of suspending him or, you know, taking his license away. And maybe they're like, you know what? Maybe he'll fight in New York again. We want him in Vegas. He brings in millions of dollars to the city.
Yeah, Pat Linval, though, is, I think, just a power-hungry harpy. She's a siren in the ocean. And what she does is she sings songs, and then she sucks your power like a succubus. So that's her role in the world. Yeah, I went to a lot of different evil female archetypes for that there.
Yeah, I was hoping for like a Medusa.
I thought about it, but she kind of kills more. And I was trying to use, you know, you got to take the power from the people. I don't know if that's what Medusa does.
So, yeah, another bizarre situation for the Nevada Athletic Commission. Nothing new there. Standard practice for them. There was also, speaking of McGregor, while we're on that topic, we got to talk about him every week. Did you see the story with Gegard Mousasi claiming that McGregor threatened him with a knife?
Something weird
via
like
Twitter
that. Like,
and a direct message. Yeah. Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, it's very
bizarre.
I skimmed over it. I'm like, reading, I'm going, what the fuck? That's, what the hell are you talking about?
Mousasi's trying to make some noise. He was at that post-fight presser after the Vitor win, and he was talking it up a little bit, trying to, you know, get some press. Good for him. But now it's like, seriously, like, you're arguing with McGregor through DM on Twitter and claiming he's going to pull a knife on you.
Yeah.
Now he wants to fight Nick Diaz, and he's just trying to... To a degree, it's okay. We're talking about him. It's working. but it's kind of like the Jeremy Stevens effect. Is this going to help him make more money or make him a bigger star?
I think it makes you look really sad. Like, if you're Jeremy Stevens, he got owned, but at least he got owned, but he's in the division. So, okay, then he can be like, hey, I'm trying to build up a fight. You're 185 pounds and you're just mentioning Connor's name. You have no justifiable reason for mentioning him. Unless somebody directly asks you, what do you think about it? There's no reason to bring him up because you're never going to fight Conor McGregor unless you think that you're going to somehow like trick us all into thinking there's going to be some magic Gegard Mousasi, Conor McGregor dream fight. You know, come on, just shut up. It's so pathetic to, it just makes as much sense as invoking Ronda Rousey. Like, are we going to build a fight with you and Ronda? No, it's just never going to happen. Shut up, you idiot. So it's just, yeah, I mean, there's plenty of guys in your division. You got Michael Bisping. He ain't Conor level star or anything, but he's Conor level talking. Like, he'll give in. You call out Bisping, he'll fucking jump on that in a second. He'll take a fight with Gegard Mousasi if Mousasi talks trash over Chris Weidman just standing there like paint on the wall.
Speaking of Twitter feuds and beefs. We started off with this, and I'm going to go back to it, but it relates to MMA. Hillary Clinton put out a video about Donald Trump's ties to Russia, and it mentioned a possible connection between Fedor, Vladimir Putin, and Trump. Did you get the opportunity to watch that video?
No, but I kind of... the video was a whole video about, was it all about that?
It was,
or was
like,
that just a part?
It was like 8 minutes long, but it was different stuff.
Okay,
Fedor
okay.
was only in it briefly.
Okay, no.
But it mentioned that Fedor and Putin were friends, and I mean, obviously, the thing with Affliction's weird because I've read and heard different stuff that Trump invested in.
He didn't invest.
And I've seen other things.
He didn't invest shit. It's just like all of his other investments.
I've read conflicting things, I guess is what I'm trying to say. But either way, he was involved in Affliction. I'm not saying he paid Fedor directly, but Fedor and him sort of worked together.
I'm sure Trump was basically paid to do it. I wouldn't be surprised at all that they gave Trump money to show up and make it look him to talk. Yeah. Like, I'm thinking about investing in this. This looks really good. And then it makes them look like they're hot shit because otherwise, I don't know. It's just weird. I mean, I understand the funniness of, like, he knew Fyodor and Fyodor knows Putin. And therefore, like, the idea that Fyodor Emelianenko is the linchpin in the secret Trump and Putin pipeline. Like, if it wasn't for this one obscure cage fighter, Trump and Putin would never have an opportunity to talk to each other. They would never be able to find common ground except for Fyodor.
It's just amazing that he is in, like, a Hillary Clinton campaign video. Do you know what I mean? Like, Hillary's the more sane candidate, and she's got Fedor in a video that, like, her, I mean, I shouldn't say her. It's her team of 100 people who decided and voted on this thing and put it together. But even so, it's like unbelievable.
What's really funny is, like, I wonder if when they saw that, I mean, maybe once, maybe somebody knew UFC or whatever, but I'm going to presume that, like, diehard Hillary Clinton staff members doing this stuff lived in DC, probably don't watch a lot of pop culture shit. So my guess is they probably saw that and was like, hey, that looks kind of shady, and thought that it was, like, really obscure. Like, we found something completely out of context. Turns out Donald Trump was just walking by and shook a hand. We'll just pretend like it's something. But instead they actually found something, like, kind of substantive. Like, Trump was involved in a major league challenge to the UFC. And they don't even really understand that there's, like, a lot of people watching that going, hey, I know that fighter. Like, they actually may have made this a bigger story than it is.
Maybe. It was something else. MMA continues to be bigger and bigger.
I don't know who it was. I don't know if somebody sent me, but they dug up the tweet from the night that Ronda Rousey lost and Donald Trump tweeted out, Ronda Rousey just got beat. Yep. She lost. What a lose. She's not a good person. And I've just been fixated on that ever since. Cause I love the idea that I think Donald Trump believes in karma. He thinks that if you're a good person, you have things. So because he has stuff, he must be a good person. She lost something, therefore she's not a good person. I guarantee you that's Trumpian philosophy 101.
There's some logic there, a little flawed, but there's some logic. Yeah, there was something. Oh, yeah, because I went back and I looked further to see why he might not like her. And basically, somebody asked her before the Kohea fight, "Oh, what do you think of Donald Trump running for president?" She's like, "I would never vote for a reality TV star for president." That was like before he had even announced, I think, his candidacy. And for Rhonda, it was a pretty simple, fairly logical assessment of the situation way back then.
I love that Trump would remember that, though, and hold that grudge. Some one-off
comment. Oh, yeah, like four months yeah, later.
Some
yeah.
one-off comment from some bimbo, as he'd probably refer to her, that he doesn't even really know shit about. And it's just like, in his mind, like, I'm going to get back at you. And then when he gets called on it, he always just says, yeah, I know I was fighting dirty, but that's how I am. If you attack me, I'm just going to go back at you harder than ever before. Oh, we're gonna miss you in a couple weeks, Donald.
Yeah, he'll still be around. So from this past weekend, there were two fights we should talk about. In my opinion, my humble opinion, there was the Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu god, or maybe goddess Mackenzie Dern. She beat Montana Stewart at 325 of the first round on the last Legacy Fighting card. It happened on October 14th in Dallas. She won the fight with a finish I don't think I've ever seen in MMA, but maybe I haven't been paying close enough attention. It was like a omoplata rear naked choke combination. Did you see that fight?
I saw the important finish and everything there. I didn't see what she looked like really yeah. standing up, but yeah, the finish is it's you don't see it a lot in MMA just because omoplatas themselves are so difficult. An omoplata in nogi especially is really difficult to secure. You can kind of weasel your arms out pretty solid easily, but if you're dry, you can lock it up. But when you do an omoplata, you're actually supposed to lean forward as if they would say, as if you're whispering in the other person's ear. So you're supposed to try to bring your head as close as you can to their head. And a lot of times you'll lock around their upper torso, like in what we call a seat belt. So all you'd really have to do is adjust one of your arm hooks and secure a choke that way. So what she did, I mean, it was impressive that she stayed with the omoplata, that she blocked the roll, that she controlled her the entire time. And I'm not entirely even sure what was the tap was from, because the omoplata was pretty nasty. Like, her shoulder was pretty gone. And I know everybody's shoulder's a little different with flexibility-wise, but, this happens when you want to go on the ground with a shark, you're going to get... Or go in the water with a shark, you're going to get eaten. Not, if you're on the ground with a shark, you might have more of a chance.
Yeah.
If you're on the ground with a shark, don't tackle the shark into the ocean and then try to fight it.
No. Those are words to live by. I watched the fight. I thought she looked good. I mean, again, she's green in MMA, but she's only 23. She's the number one ranked... jiu-jitsu fighter in the world for women at the moment. I mean, she even beat Gabby Garcia once. So obviously her ground game is going to be better than anyone else's in MMA. I mean, obviously there's some difference between traditional jiu-jitsu and MMA because you can throw punches and there's a lot more going on. But she's already going to be elite level on the ground no matter what. So it's just a matter of her, getting some striking and some wrestling and being able to get the takedown. I mean, she got the takedown and she went for an armbar early and kind of lost the armbar and then was on her back in full guard, then just got that omoplata and went to town. It was impressive. Again, it's on a regional show. The woman she fought, Montana Stewart, was 6-2. Four straight wins, four of them by submission, something like that. So Stewart wasn't like a joke. She was kind of game, but Dern walked right through her. Hopefully she kind of takes her time moving into the UFC and they don't rush it, because, I mean, that's her goal, to be in the UFC by 2017. So time will tell on her, but she's a hot prospect and might do big things in MMA.
Yeah, she's. I mean, her. It's really not fair to compare men and women's jiu-jitsu accomplishments just because the depth of talent isn't there. Sure. But
I mean, you could say the same thing in MMA.
Yeah,
too.
Pretty much. But amongst the females, I mean, she's about as high level as anybody's. Well, she is. She's as high level as anyone will have ever been in MMA. The only person in of her caliber that fought regularly in MMA recently would be Roger Gracie. I mean, even Damian Maia, in theory, doesn't have the credentials that she does, and we've seen what he's been able to do. So, and with women, I think that specialists like that can get they can get away with a little bit more. The women's game just starts being developed. And we saw Ronda, she just pretty much does one thing, and she was whooping ass. And this is a little lighter weight, which I think will work against her. You're going to have to be a more complete fighter because, I mean, she is light years ahead of most people, but you get down there, I mean, they're just going to avoid the ground. Like, they're good enough at it, especially the UFC, the upper five level. They're good enough to fight like men, if you will.
Yeah. I mean, to me, the big thing with her is she's only 23. You know, at like 21 years old, she was winning world championships in jiu-jitsu. And now she's the number one ranked jiu-jitsu practitioner in the world, and she's only 23. She's got some time. She's got time. I don't want to say she's a freak, but to a degree, she's a freak. How many 21-year-old world champions are there in jiu-jitsu ever?
I think it's probably fair to say that in many respects, it's basically like taking a multiple-time Division I champion wrestler and putting them in MMA, and you'd say the odds are with your pedigree you're going to do very well.
Right.
And, I mean, she's young and she's outstanding and, I hope she keeps doing well in MMA. I like to see good submissions.
Yeah. Time will tell. But she's probably the hottest prospect out there in the women's game at the moment. So if you haven't seen her, you should check her out. Now we're going to go to the total opposite end of the spectrum. Shane Carwin returned to combat sports this weekend.
I was trying to figure out what the other fight was. I'm like, what the fuck other fight is he talking about?
Yeah, no, this is even more obscure than legacy fighting. Shane Carwin knocked out radio personality, skateboarder, and MMA fan Jason Ellis with one arm. Wasn't quite tied behind his back. It was more like duct tape to the side of his body. But he knocked him out at Ellis Mania 13. Didn't get a lot of press. I can't imagine why.
I mean, you know, some guys that get released from their UFC contract, they want to get in there as quick as they can, and they just take whatever fight presents itself. So I guess that's what Shane Carwin had to do.
Oh, my God. It was ridiculous. He hit Ellis pretty hard. Carwin's huge, man. He's still a big, scary-looking dude. But at 40-something years old, his prospects of, taking real fights at this point are probably – I mean, when I say real fights, you know, your top 10 heavyweights in the world are probably done, but he's still probably got that one punch power, and I know he's trying to get back into MMA, and clearly a few people saw this, so his name's out there a little more than it used to be, I guess.
I'll say this, if I'm Bellator, I think that there's actually as much money as there is to be made in Bellator. I think there's real money if you just promoted Bobby Lashley and Shane Carwin. I think that would just be it would probably even be kind of a fair fight, although, boy, that'd be, I don't know. Now Lashley's too old, he get hurt, I think, but beat whoever Lashley's fighting this weekend, I don't know.
Lashley is fighting this weekend, yeah. Some guy named Josh Appelt. Other upcoming shows coming up. There's rumors of this. Jose Aldo was apparently in Vegas earlier today to meet with Dana and the Zuffa executives, whoever are left at this point. To kind of clear the air, talk about things going forward. There was no real settlement reached, I guess, according to Aldo, although who knows. He says he's going to have more conversations with him in the future, but he's not looking to fight right now. But immediately after the meeting, there were rumors of a possible Jose Aldo Dominic Cruz semi-main event on UFC 207. That was the rumor of what they were going to offer him to kind of, you know, win him over and sweeten the pot. Be on the show with Rousey. It's going to do a million buys. You're the co-headliner. It's kind of a dream match with Dominic Cruz. If that was the deal offered, would you take it if you were Aldo?
Yeah. I mean, that's a winnable fight. You've got actually one of the few styles that's really designed to deal with the guy that moves around a lot like he does. And that semi-main event slot there, when all you're going to do is make yourself a bigger star. Odds are you win a giant mega super fight. You actually kind of further legitimize yourself as a featherweight champion. And you'd be making all that money underneath Ronda. I mean, goddamn, you fight like a wild dog or a boar if you get to fight on the semi-main of a Ronda show, as long as you're getting points.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's conjecture, it's a rumor, but if I were Aldo, I would take that in a heartbeat. I mean, it's not the best matchup, but again, it's okay. Cruz is a name. They can play it up as a dream fight, you know, the best 135-pounder of the last 10 years versus the best 145-pounder, excluding McGregor. I know nobody considers him the best 145-pounder. But they could really promote that as a serious dream fight. Granted, they're not the biggest names, but for hardcore fans, that's a sick fight.
Yeah, and I think that if you're tuning in and you're going to watch Ronda and you see the semi-main event is – and you're just hearing dream fight between two champions at the same time. And you probably know those guys a little bit. It's not exactly, you know, Mighty Mouse facing Joanna or something like that.
I would watch that.
Well, you're a monster.
How about other upcoming fights? There's this Fox 22 show in Sacramento on December 17th. Dana White actually announced the main event for this show. This is on Big Fox, mind you. Paige Van Sant versus Michelle Waterson is the headliner for that show. Is that 2 week of a headliner, or you think something like that can draw on Big Fox?
I mean, they must have looked at the numbers from her fight in the last Big Fox and came away that she was the big winner and did really, really well. They got a lot of shows that month. You don't always, maybe they don't want to burn a really big main event. And I mean, it's funny because like she and Michelle Waterson's actually not like a terrible mismatch or anything, because Michelle is better, but I think she's coming up in weight. She's the karate hottie. It's weird because it's almost like they're too perfect of a main event. It looks like it's like, oh really? You're gonna put the two really pretty girls in there, but like they can both actually go and they're probably around the same level, and like they could, you know, yes, they're attractive comparatively, but I don't know. I mean, I can't remember what the other fight is on that. There's something else on that show, but
this is like the Teen Beat.
Oh, that's right.
Nikki Gall versus Sage Northcutt.
That's right. That's what it was. Oh, gosh. This just has to be marketed as, like, you know, New Blood Rising or something like that.
It's like an episode of Saved by the Bell.
It's UFC The Next Generation. Yeah,
there's legit only two fights announced for the show. Granted, it's still... You know what? It's only 2 months away. It's December 17th, and I mean, it's October 19th now, so they've only got two fights technically announced of Nikki Gall versus Sage Northcutt and Paige Van Zandt versus Michelle Waterson. It'll be very interesting to see how that show does ratings-wise. I like both those fights. I think they're fun. I'll watch almost anything. And I mean, there's an interesting twist to both of those fights. Hopefully they both end up being hair matches.
Well, it feels like winner of each match is supposed to mate with the winner of the other match. Like, I feel like the UFC is pushing really, really hard for Sage and Paige to become a real thing. I feel like Dana White dreams of being able to like market Sage and Paige. Like, he's like the badass pretty boy karate guy, and she's the good looking dancer. It's like some weird combination of like Grease, Karate Kid in the UFC, and like he can like book weird fantasy things, and like they have like a fantasy dream house at stake for one of their matches or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, and Gall and Watterson play the evil heels, like they cheat and there's like low blows. Yeah. And yeah, it could be good. It could be good. Another fight, different company was announced, I think today or yesterday. I'm getting a little confused in my old age here, but Chael Sonnen versus Tito Ortiz is booked for Bellator on January 21st at the Forum in Inglewood. Always up to no good. Thoughts on that fight? You have any opinion on it one way or the other?
Yeah, it's Chael moving up in weight, but really giving up a little bit of size, but he's younger and better, and I don't know. It doesn't really bother me that much, because I don't feel like it's being presented as we're really showing you, we're not putting Chael in there with somebody legitimate. We understand we have a steroid user we're going to put up against a big-headed monkey over here, and yeah, it'll work itself out, and they'll talk the appropriate amount of trash. And let's face it, Tito and Stefan Bonner did really well. This should dwarf that. So,
yeah, I mean,
it's a battle of the Trump lovers, though.
His son and a Trump supporter.
He ran as a Republican once, so
yeah, I know. But a lot of Republicans aren't
true
on board with
but
Trump.
I don't know. Like, Chael Sonnen is Donald Trump in MMA.
To a degree. For me, it's really the biggest fight they could have made. Unless maybe they did Chael and Rampage, maybe.
I think that would have.
Yeah, I know. I feel like Ortiz and Rampage are bigger names, though. And to just get the general. Like, I know we know the Sonnen Vanderlei feud, and they were on Tough and all that. But I think that's more. I don't know. I think Ortiz and Rampage are bigger draws.
Yeah,
and draw just
that's probably
as well.
True.
And they'll talk it up better than Vanderlei, that's for sure. Either way, I think this is one of the better drawing fights they could have put together. From a competitive standpoint, you would favor Sonnen just because Ortiz is Ortiz at this point. Do you think it'll break the Bellator's record? Ratings are still from Bellator 149 with the double co-headliner of Kimbo versus Dada 5000 and Ken Shamrock versus Royce Gracie 3. Does it beat that?
No. I think that one's going to stand for a long time. That's a total freak show number. There's only so many times you can feature a match where within 60 days both of the men involved will have died at one time or another. Like, these are special circumstances, and Chael and Tito will be fine, but that's not Hoist and Ken. That's not Kimbo and a guy with a number in his name. Like, it doesn't appeal in the same way.
Yeah, maybe there'll be something else on the undercard that can boost it up. But I would anticipate being the second biggest show they've ever done, and maybe close to Kimbo Dada. It depends what the last couple of days of promotion and how much trash they're talking. I just feel like Sonnen's going to lay into Ortiz, and it's gonna be a one sided drubbing in the cage and outside of the cage. But we shall see. I just don't think Ortiz can hang with Sonnen when he's laying into him, verbally, especially. This weekend there is a show. There's a Bellator show Friday night, October 21st in Memphis at the FedEx Forum. Not a major show by any stretch. No tent pole here. The main event is Kendall Grover's Alexander Shlemenko. That's the main event. That's what they got. Kendall Grove. He's been around forever. It's crazy. He's still, I feel like he should be way older than he is. And then, you got Shlemenko, who lost to Tito and got bagged for some kind of steroid.
Didn't he get like 3 years or something?
Yeah, I think he fought it. Okay. They brought it down. Then you've also got Bobby Lashley versus Josh Appelt. Hisaki Kato is on the card. He had that knockout a while ago. That was pretty impressive. Oh, who was he fighting? The kickboxer out of the Diaz camp.
Joe Schilling.
Yeah, like knockout of the year candidate versus Joe Schilling. So he's kind of fun to watch sometimes. Ryan Couture's on the undercard, and so is Baby Slice. I want Couture's son to fight Kimbo's son at some point. That just seems like it should happen, I feel like.
That's just weird. Like I can accept, okay, the guys I watched growing up, kind of whatever, like, they're going to be old enough to have kids on the show, and Randy is especially old, and Kimbo's not exactly young either. Well, he's not anything now. But, like, of all, like, the just two completely opposite ends of the spectrum, trashy Street Fighter, Olympic hero, and their sons are the ones that are on the same card at the same time.
Yeah. And I know we touched on this in the past when they first signed, I call him Baby Slice. I think it's Kevin Ferguson Jr. is his legitimate real name.
Baby Slice is way
his
better.
Birth name. On the birth certificate, it says Baby Slice. Sounds like a weird kind of cheese you'd get at the supermarket, Baby Slice. Anyway, he's not on the main card. He's not on the televised portion of the card. I think he's 1-0 as an amateur or something like that. He's got one pro fight. So it seems like they're not exploiting him. They're not really promoting it that heavy. It's on the undercard, which, I mean, to a degree is kind of nice to see. Maybe they're just helping him out, get him some money, get him a start, do a solid for Kimbo.
Do a solid for killing his father.
Well, my concern, listen, my concern was they were going to throw him into these crazy fights right off the bat to get ratings, you know?
I guess.
And it doesn't seem like they're doing that yet.
I know, but it's like, it's Kimbo Slice Jr. It's not like they're really worried. Oh, shit, is the UFC going to sign him? Uh-oh, no. Like, let him fight in Total Fighting Championships like everybody else who's going to vie for a shot at Mighty Mouse. You got to work your way in your regional circuit, and then you get a world title. That's just how it is.
Yeah. No, I'm with you, but to me it's just, the question was, were they trying to just throw him a bone and do something nice, or was it more devious, like, oh, we'll put him in with some football player who's never fight and try and pop a rating?
Yeah, I know. They do seem, whatever their reasons for hiring him, he's clearly not being exploited, so.
Eventually they will probably do that, I realize that, but so far, so good, I'm reserving judgment, I'm trying to be, what is it? Fair and unbalanced is even better. That's all I got. Did we miss anything? Anything that's happening in your world?
I don't think so. No, I think that's everything. Right. I think we hit it all.
Okay. Anything coming up on the site?
Let's see. I have at least 3 podcasts I did in the past couple of days in the bag. Okay. I kept telling myself, I'll publish them. One of them, I disproved the existence of infinite universes while answering the question of what is the purpose of life. So that's a pretty good episode. And then the other two, I talk about Australia a lot and kangaroos and Aboriginal people. So, yeah, it's that's what we got coming in the next couple of days.
All right. Sounds good.
All right. So, that's it, everybody. Thanks for listening to this show, and Matt, we'll say goodbye.
All right. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk again soon.
Aggressively, we all defend the role we play. Regrettably, times come to send you on your way. We've seen it all, bonfires of trust, flash floods of pain. It doesn't really matter, don't you worry, it'll all work out. No, it doesn't even matter, don't you worry, that ain't what it's all about. We hope you enjoy your